This is Infants on Thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Have you ever wondered, what's up with the kids these days and their DJ spinning, electronic raving music? I mean, what's so appealing about a musician pushing a play button? And what's the deal with all those weird and skimpy outfits? Well, wonder no more. On this episode, Marisa and Carson Calderwood talk about finding healing and community through EDM music and culture. I just wanna know what you look like without a weight on your soul. I know somewhere we could get away. If you wanna find another place, love, disappear and never leave a trace. Take you anywhere you want. So let me disarm you. There's an army I'm fighting around your heart. Let me disarm you. Cause baby, I just wanna love for you really hard. Pull you really hard.
Marisa and Carson Calderwood, what's up?
Hey.
Not much.
Thanks for coming on. This has been a pain in your ass to get this scheduled. So I apologize for that. You've been incredibly patient with me, you guys. Thanks for doing that.
You're welcome. It was partly our fault because it's like the universe didn't want this to happen, because right after we moved in, we were going to do that. And we ran into, remember, like five problems trying to get my internet connected. So actually blame all that on you.
Yeah. Well, it is. Well, me trying to schedule something in the midst of a move was just brilliant. But then we came into festival season, and we know that wasn't going to be an option. So
exactly.
But before we get to the festival stuff and that topic, which is really what we want to hear about, give us an elevator speech of who you are. Well, I want to ask you, in the universe of ex-Mormon celebrities, if you had to do like an A, B, C, D list, who would be on those lists? Who's an ex-Mormon A-lister?
John Delenn.
Yeah, of course. Kelly. Mike Norton.
Yeah. Jeremy Reynolds.
All you guys, definitely in front of those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
There's. Yeah.
We don't want to be on that list.
No
one wants to be on that list.
Okay. We're e-celebrities.
Yeah. Well, there's kind of two lists. There's the ex-Mormon list, and then there's the ex-Mormon list. And so it's like,
that's true.
Two different categories.
Sean Larson and you guys, ex-Mormons.
Yeah, I guess that's right. So if on the ex-Mormon list of celebrities, where would you guys put yourselves?
I would say we were B-celebrities for a while, and now we're like non-existent. Yeah.
You choose, yeah. You know, that's it's how much you choose to be
involved,
to stay involved, because
and we intentionally like got out of almost all. I think I'm only involved in two ex-Mormon groups on Facebook, the VIP,
yeah.
And it's like it was just too much tension. It was like not letting go and staying involved, as intriguing as that was. It's like driving by a bad car wreck, and I just kept slowing my life down. And I'm like, ugh, I gotta get these images and this out. And so we moved on, and it's been a much healthier place. So it was hard to do, but way better.
It's like looking back instead of looking forward. If you got to figure out a whole new self, then it just, I don't feel like I don't have time to look back and to pick apart some of the Mormon stuff. But I feel like you guys have a different thing where you kind of have a community around it, you know? And so it's fulfilling in that way. Like for us just to do it by ourselves and, I don't know, be involved in some ways, I don't think it would be fulfilling.
Well, and that's why we keep listening to IoT. So it's good.
Right. And not really anything else. So.
Well, and I'm interested that you mentioned community, Marisa, because that's one of the things I want to explore as we're talking more about like the direction that you guys have gone. Because I feel like that's a big void when people leave the church and you leave that whole network that's there of your ward connections and that community that you have. And there's so much struggle in trying to find a way to replace things that you've lost. And like, I don't know that that's really what Infants is or what it does, but maybe that is the appeal that it has for some people. I think we're getting kind of tired of it ourselves, but,
we
like the community, but just like, what is it that like binds us together as a community, I guess.
Yeah.
But a lot of people find that in ex-Mormonism in various ways, I think. And I think if you have a group, if you have people you enjoy, then like go for it, you know, but we don't. Our Seattle to Mormons group is just spread all over the Puget Sound area. It's just not like, it's not realistic to get together very often. And so we just kind of had to find something else, really.
And at some point I'm finding, what do I really have in common with a lot of these ex-Mormon people that are in the group? It turns out that not a whole lot, other than this Mormonism tie, and it's not something I want to necessarily connect me to other people anyway. So we find other things and other interests, and yeah. So I think that's good on you if that you've been able to do that, man. I think is better than a lot of people, and a lot healthier. And
thank you.
I think it's related to this topic we're doing. Yeah,
it totally is. Well, and part of that is, you see those people coming out and suffering, and you kind of want to help them transition. You kind of want to be there for them, because it's like the hardest thing, one of the hardest things you ever do, but it weighs on you. So we kind of intentionally decided, like at first when we were kind of like still had enough clout for members before the excommunication, for me, especially for a few years, I wanted to create this image of, look, I'm not a full believer, but I'm still a good person, and you can still have a happy life, and your kids aren't going to go be crazy and stuff like that. Like, I had an uncle tell me all my kids are going to get pregnant as teenagers and get addicted to drugs and ruin their life. Right. So I was like trying to break that stereotype. But then when we got excommunicated, we lost any credibility for those still inside. And so like, all right, let's just have an influence. Like, I don't want to be there in that difficult phase of helping these people as much. Like, I can't, like, honestly, I wish I could do more, but I can't. So what can we do? So we're like, let's just create this. Let's help people see you can have this happy, fun, fulfilling life with great kids that are healthy, doing awesome, and just help people see that. And that's kind of what we wanted to do. So we can move on, yet still give some good influence back.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Amen to all that.
So you can only meet up and talk about your baggage for so long before you're like, let's move on.
So we aspire that at some point listeners will be here that have no idea really about Mormonism and certainly don't have the history. So real quick, to give those listeners an idea of your background, a 3-4 minute or less elevator speech about your background, coming to the point of some major life transitions, I guess.
So probably kind of starts with me. I grew up, you know, your whole life, they tell you in Mormonism, if you read the scriptures, pray, you'll feel this feeling. That's God telling you that church is true. And I would feel those feelings other times, but never praying and reading. And I always bugged me, but I didn't have enough self-confidence to say, oh, it's because the church isn't true, and walk away. So I had like the slowest burnout of all. It was like the 20 years to get me out of church. I'm like, Scott, it was like, what, a week for him? So it's like, I'm the exact opposite. It took forever. And so as I was researching these things forever of trying to prove, I couldn't prove Mormonism spiritually. So I tried to prove it intellectually. And the more I tried to prove it, the more it fell apart. And I kept sharing stuff with her through time. And she would be like, why can't you just let go? It's like, just like, don't worry about that. Just keep being faithful like you are and do that. And so eventually it got to the point where I felt comfortable enough not believing that I started to support ordained women. And I had a pretty significant calling and mistake. And they said, you can't do that and keep your calling. And I'm like, all right. And I think they were trying to call my bluff. And they're like, so we're going to take your calling away
and your temple recommend.
And I was like, all right, that's fine. Because I just didn't care anymore. And they like caught him off guard. But luckily for me, having kind of wishing she would be willing to leave, because I didn't want to leave without her.
Yeah, I wasn't like 100% there yet. You know, I was like, ooh, this seems really messed up, but I think I still believe it, you know. And we both grew up Mormon, and we met at BYU, and we were just super, super Mormon for a long time. But it was just about 3 years ago that we were at that point where we're like, I don't know, I'm not 100% sure. And that was the clincher for me. I was like, hold up. Like, Carson's been not believing but 100% active for like years, and he's been so faithful, and now you're going to take away his temple recommend just because he supports ordained women? Like, he hasn't done anything wrong at all, and so that for me was just like, that's it. Like, I was so mad, and it just allowed me to believe, like, okay, it makes total sense now. It's all made up. It just turned the tide for me.
It's like in just a little shout out to Glenn and the Righteous Mind, is they have to hit on that heartstring that is a little stronger. And that's what it was on for the women's rights, was like a sensitive thing for her. And so when the church showed they cared less about that than other things, that's what enabled her to leave. And then we left.
Yeah.
and then ultimately excommunicated. That's badass. Yeah,
about a year later, about a year after that happened, we got excommunicated for publicly disbelieving, basically.
I'd written blogs, a couple. But, I wrote a couple. What do you call them? Blog posts about like when the church wrote the essay on genetics in the Book of Mormon. I wrote a thing about how they're instead of continental drift, there's doctrinal drift going on in the church, which is like a throwback to that essay, which kind of showed that they're just logically, you can't look at all the shit the church does and not say, okay, they're changing and they say they won't change. So it's like, it's just really easy. And I think it was too much. And they're like, you can't be still a member and being saying stuff like that with the influence you still have with this community that we live in our part of Washington. Cause it's like 15% Mormon. It's kind of Phoenix like, where there's just a really high concentration of Mormons there. And so like, we need to draw a line so people don't think we support what you're saying, which was ridiculous.
And right. So that's how our state felt about it. but you know, it worked though. Like, to be honest,
yeah.
Right. We got completely shut out by everyone.
Effective.
There was a lot of people that were kind of on the fence and they just dove right back in. You know, they just retrenched hardcore. We lost all of our friends and eventually we moved because we're like, oh, we don't feel comfortable here anymore. Like, you walk through the store and people literally look at you and turn around and walk the other direction. And that's happening to our kids too.
Yeah.
Kind of like that first year, they're like, oh, maybe they'll come back. So they let our kids come over and play. But after a year or so, they're like, whoa, they're gone. Like, they're not coming back. So stop letting our kids come over. And we're like, screw it. You know, we're like going to Seattle all the time anyway, because that's where all of our new friends are, which that's our new group. Let's move closer, get our kids out of this, get them to West Seattle, which is really diverse and funky. Like, we love it here. So it's, it was hard, but better.
Well, when was the excommunication? How long ago?
It was in May of 2015.
May of 2015.
And it wasn't until a year ago on the first day of school when our kids came home crying that I was like, that's it, we're moving. So that was like, you know, a year and 4 months later is when we decided to move. So.
It's an interesting, I guess, reminder at how effective excommunication is at doing exactly what I think they want it to do, and alienate and ostracize and send that scarlet letter case, an entire family, including kids.
Yep. And excluded from the tribe.
And in an area like Seattle that you'd think was, or at least the Washington area, that's pretty liberal and would you'd think would have a little more open-minded than other areas, but even there, you got the same impact.
I think if we had been living in the city like we do now, it would have been a big difference, but we lived almost an hour outside the city, and it's kind of the country, and it's just much, much more conservative.
Right.
So we're like, it's like our kids, it's so funny because they talk about the difference in school there and here, and like school there, like, almost everyone was white, and they like the teachers were so like kind of a little bit pro Trump and conservative. They come out here and like teachers drop F bombs in school, and they're talking about everyone is like anti Trump. They're like, Dad, you wouldn't believe. It's like, I'm not the only atheist in the school anymore. And I'll say stuff like that. So it's like the difference is that 45 minute drive is night and day difference.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and do you think the excommunication in retrospect was allowed you to move quicker and was a little more freeing than it otherwise might have been?
Yeah, like ripping a Band-Aid off. Like, it was really painful at the time, and it branded us, like, for our extended families, you know, that, like, there's just way more of a separation between us because of it. And it was more painful, but also more just, like, fast. Just, like, that's it. Like,
That was, like, one of the biggest favors, like, the bishop that said he was going to take away my temple recommend, like, he did me such a huge favor. I'm unfortunately not, especially back then, I think I've changed a lot in the last couple of years. I wasn't confident enough in my own decision process to be like, you know what, screw this, screw Mormonism, screw like my family, all the, it was the best way of explaining it. It used to be like, there's no way I could be right. And all these Harvard professors that are general authorities and all these people in my world, everyone is wrong and I'm right.
Like pioneer ancestors, everybody.
I couldn't do that. And like, so they did that for me, thank goodness, and got me out. It's been a big benefit. The best thing I've gotten from the church yet.
What a gift.
Well, I do have one request or one, I guess, some homework I want to give you guys, is you're going to be responsible for providing the soundtrack to this episode.
Oh, definitely.
All right. So, so let's get into it.
How dirty do you want that bass to be?
That's right. So these Mormon kids, you know, and I do like seeing the old photos that would you have memories from, like, when you first got married and different yeah. things to see how Mormon the Calderwoods were.
Yeah.
And I like it because, I mean, it feels like the same thing for us.
We all used to be there.
Yeah, we were all there. And I love that because I never knew those Calderwoods. I only knew these Calderwoods. But what was the first introduction to this EDM world?
Go for it. It's kind of a long, it doesn't take a long time, but it goes way back.
Yeah.
Well, so, actually, I'm going to stop. I'm going to go even back a little bit more because I like EDM, right? I really got into it in the last year or so. I really appreciate the musicality of it. I listen to it just in my life. My kids, go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah. You say EDM, like I'm supposed to know exactly what that is. So this is like the rave culture.
Thanks.
Like thump, thump, thump music kind of stuff. That's what you're talking about?
How would you describe it?
Well, it stands for electronic dance music.
Okay, cool.
And so it comes kind of out of, like, there used to be like Europop. Like, remember like Pet Shop Boys and Erasure, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we used to call it techno, like 20 so years ago. And then they kind of like, it branched out. And there's a lot of history where it comes back to Chicago and they call it house style music because there's a place there called The House. And but since then, in the last 25 or so years, it just has kind of exploded into a lot of different genres. So now you have electronic dance music that's more chill, that's way more hard, you know, like it's all over the page. So, but it's all under the umbrella of EDM.
Is it like designed specifically for altered states of reality that you hear things or
say some of it definitely is, but I think it just, they kind of co-evolved together.
You know, okay.
The altered states came first and then they made music for that. They just kind of all came together.
And I think if anything, it's made for dancing and dance clubs.
Yeah.
Right. That's the point.
Yeah. What I've been amazed by is all the subgenres, like you were just talking about how, I guess they are very diverse and you've got, give us a quick list of the different steps.
So I hesitate because there's like the people really know their stuff. Like some of our friends that are our age, that have been doing it since they were like 14.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, no, you're wrong, Carson. So here's my, we like bass. It seems like a lot of people either go like more house headish or bass head. A lot of people mm-hmm. like kind of go one of those two ways. We're definitely got more bass. A lot of people know about dubstep, which is like pretty intense, but then there's like subgenres like chill step that I really like, or melodic dubstep, which mm-hmm. are kind of two of my favorite because it's more like chill. And like, if I'm gonna listen at work, that's what I like to listen to.
So it's kind of like the Hall & Oates, Billy Joel version of EDM.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. You're speaking my language now. All right. I gotcha.
And it's kind of, you either kind of go towards the lighter side or the deeper side, I think.
Yeah.
And so like one of our Utah friend ravers, like she just loves the trance. Like it's just like a lot of like high floaty sounds and it always will have like a thumping bass, but there's kind of the high side, or we prefer the low side, which is just like the dirty bass is what they call it. And it's just, it's got more hip hop mixed in. That's where trap music comes from. It's like a blend.
EDM trap.
Well,
cause trap, I like to always clarify, like trap music actually is a style of like of rap and stuff. And then that influenced EDM a lot and mm-hmm. became EDM trap, but a lot of people just say trap, but it's actually not the original trap.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
A lot of hip hop mixed in, and it's just like I don't know, it's just like a different sound, and it's way, way more fun to dance.
And,
yeah. And that's what, when I'm at the club, that's what I like. I don't really sit at home and play some really dirty bass music.
It's right,
like,
right.
Too much is too
intense. It's obnoxious almost.
Yeah.
But if you're in the moment, in the environment, like, that's what you want.
And one of the problems with that is if I'm, like, at a club and I'm really excited, I'm like, this is amazing. And I, like, pull up my phone to go do a Snapchat of it or record it. And I listen to it later. I'm like, it's not shit like that. It's not that – it's like, people are like, why in the hell do they like this music? It's not that great. Yeah. But when you're there and it's all the friends around you and it's, like, you feel the bass, mm-hmm. that's awesome.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So they bring it up because as I've been sharing it with a lot of my friends my age, I mean, they fucking hate it. Like I'm
30 year olds hate it.
Yeah. the 30 and 40 year olds. Yeah. They just, I feel like I'm talking to my dad back when I started listening to rap music. This isn't all they do is push play and that kind of crap. And I find it real fascinating to see that same thing happen. As people that get old tend to have the same biases against music, but anyway. So how did you get into it? What was the progression?
So we have, in Seattle, we have the longest running dance music radio station in the country. It's been going for over 40 years. And so I think that really is how it started, because when I was a kid, I would listen, for me, right? Because I grew up in Seattle area, Carson grew up in Salt Lake. So I would listen to it sometimes as a kid, and I was like, ooh, this is good. And, you know, it was more of like the house music and the older techno at the time. And there was a kid that we were driving out to one of our local music festivals, and he's one of our friends, and he's like 23. And we turned on the radio, and he goes, oh, you guys listen to this station? This is great, right? C89.5, you know this? And I said, honey, I've been listening to the station since before you were born. And he's like, whoa, I forgot you guys are so old. But, you know, it's just been around for a long time. So I listened to it when I was in high school, and there used to be like local places that would play it really, really loud, you know, like ice cream shops that I could go into as a teenager. And so that was kind of like a part of my growing up.
And we both loved to dance, and I didn't have a station like that in Utah, obviously, but, I was always drawn towards that. Like when I got back from my mission, I think it was, and I bought that Madonna CD.
Ray of Light.
Ray of Light.
The one that she did that was like dance music.
It was very, it was like what kind of ahead of its time in a lot of ways. It was really good. And I was always drawn towards that type of music. And so when we met, we loved to dance. So we'd go out and dance as much as we could at BYU. And then we graduated.
Never a dance club.
We never went to a dance club because we had that idea in our mind that they were evil. That's true. I think Carson went before he met me.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about going dancing,
I think I've been there.
I stayed dances in high school and then like BYU on campus dances.
Yeah.
I mean, were like squeaky clean. I never have gone to the Vortex or any of those clubs in Provo. That people
you're dancing to like Erasure and stuff like
that.
Yeah. So then we go to dental school and we get done, we move out to Washington. So then we can start listening to that station again, and we loved it. And I used to actually call that music all that. I called it my Mormon coffee, because I'd have to stay up really late at night doing all this research for how to open a dental office and how to make the business practices of the best. I would just spend hours, but to not fall asleep, I would just be cranking that music in the background. So it was like, so we really listened for years, and we really fell in love with like artists like Cascade, who's also a Mormon. And we really wanted to go see him. Like in 2010, he came to Seattle, but we're like, can't go to those unholy places where Cascade plays his music. You know, it's like,
I don't understand how he's Mormon and he plays in evil places all the time. Yeah. Like, maybe he's not really a true Mormon.
he still is, actually. So we went and saw him.
Wait. Did you say he's still Mormon?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think he's like, we know people that know him. We don't know him personally, but I think he just doesn't know much about the church. It's just where he grew up.
He's a cultural Mormon.
But he like, you know, he cares about family. He likes to be a good person. So what he knows, it clicks for him. So, but we saw him, and then that radio station, C9.5, would put on these listener appreciation parties that were all ages. So everyone could go, and it felt a little more safe. So we started going to those.
I was still scared, like, to step into a dance club. Like, I mean, I really thought that, like, the spirit was going to be at the door. It was going to leave me.
And then while you're out, something's going to happen to the kids, and the spirit
Satan might ask you to dance.
Yeah.
And we were like, we were going to these like radio station with dance parties in garments and sober. Like, yeah. I mean,
just
we were still like 100% Mormon.
Yeah. So we did that for a while, and then eventually
was it the garments that like kept, it was like a barrier against any kind
of. Yeah.
That's why you were sober. You kept taking stuff, but it wouldn't.
Yeah.
It shield and protect.
Neither one of us drank a drop of alcohol until 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is one of the crazy things. We talk about people that are friends in like the party scene, and they're like, wait, like you're lying, right? You got married at 23 or 22 as a virgin, and Marisa was 19, a virgin. You never drank alcohol until 2 years ago, and not even coffee.
Yeah, I don't think they actually believe
this. Yeah, they don't believe this. So it's like,
That is a foreign concept to non-Mormons. I mean, that just blows their mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it just kind of slowly evolved. And then when we left the church, we're like, you know, we've been wanting to do this. We've been going to those like tame versions. Let's just go. And we lost all of our social networks. So we're like, you know what? We need to rebuild, to find new friends. We need to start over. Let's go. We love music. We love dancing. Let's go to these dance clubs and start making friends there. So we kind of.
I remember a day when we just were like, we just felt like 100% alone. You know, we're like, now what? Like, we just have no more friends in the world. And we live in this place and we have zero people to call right now and hang out with. And we went out, we just like, let's just go to like the party area of Seattle and let's just find a restaurant and let's just like see if we like it, if it's like our scene or whatever. And so we just went up to this place called Poquitos in Capitol Hill and we just sat there and it was kind of like a fun environment. And we're like, okay, like, Dad, what, now what? I think there's a dance club close to here. Maybe we should try that. Like, I mean, just 100% starting over. Hmm.
Were you conscious that, or you know, aware that there was a culture and in this kind of in this atmosphere in this? I mean, were you aware?
It was what someone else did. I think we were aware of it, but we weren't inside of it at all.
But even more than that, like the whole rave, the Candy Kids, all that culture, which we can explain it later. We actually didn't know about that. We went to Cruella concert in before Excommunication, I think, or maybe right.
But no, after we left, no, it was when we were still like totally Mormon.
And so we go, and we love Cruella. It's like one of our favorite groups, and especially Marisa. We go there, just thinking we're going to a regular Cruella concert, and it's actually this place called the Paramount, which is a really nice theater in Seattle, probably the nicest one. And then there's these kind of Candy Kids. This one girl walks in wearing this little white thong, two little white pasties on her nipples, and flip-flops. And we're like, what the heck? What is that? And then all the, you know, with all the
people wearing furries and like the furry boots, the light up stuff. I mean, just everything. And we were, this is a few years ago and we were like, what is this?
Yeah. All right. You're using language that I'm sure 90% of our our listeners don't understand. When you say Candy Kids.
So it's Candy, K-A-N-D-I is what they call it. And it specifically refers to the bracelets that people make and trade. And
with like the
pony beads.
The pony beads.
And like letters, you write stuff on it. And so that's like, technically that's rave candy. But I mean, if you say Candy Kids, that kind of means that like younger ravers who dress up a lot and are probably wearing a lot of neon and.
Or older, newly excommunicated Mormon.
you might have a 16-year-old son and still be a candy kid.
Yeah. Right.
So this is what you're typically talking about, like festival outfits and.
But it's kind of a side of it or a style where like some people might be a little more sophisticated. Some people might still wear like festival wear, but it might look a little more like Coachella or something that's like a little more boho or a little more all black. And like the Candy Kids side of it is a little more of the neon, punk, whatever. Like,
and the older, definitely the older ravers, they like look down upon that, it seems like, especially the older, they've kind of gone more into house and stuff like that, more chill. They're like,
yeah.
They look down on it as like just this stupid little phase you go through when you're 16 to 21 and move on. But it's we love it. But what I actually say, that's not that strong, because one of the great things that we'll definitely talk about later is the openness of being just authentic in that community, which is amazing.
Yeah. Mm. I would say it's not people that go to raves that really look down on Candy Kids. It's old people that go to, like, you know, 40-year-olds that go to dance clubs that choose not to go to raves anymore because they think they're too cool for that.
So so then there's a, like the spirit hoods, like they'll put on like a wolf hood that has little mittens that hang down, like some of the things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where.
So now, okay, I want to talk about since we're here. I want to talk about those outfits that are both kind of skimpy and, you know, don't have a lot. Like you mentioned the pasties and kind of the booty shorts and maybe the furry boots, and it's definitely loud and sexy and comfortable and all those things, right?
Yeah.
What's the philosophy behind that?
I think there's two parts. One is that it's just hot. It's just always so hot in there. I mean, you're just dripping sweat. And so that's where you get a lot of girls to put their hair up in crazy styles. And because I can't handle like having it sticking to my whole body, you know, and you really want to wear as little clothing as possible. But
a lot of girls braid their hair like that. Like I call the Viking braid or whatever. talking about?
You're just talking about like double French braids?
Double French braids, yeah. They'll do that right together.
Yeah, because you literally just want it like away from your face.
But, so it's really functional. I mean, there's a functional piece of it.
Yes. But then also there's like an individuality side of it, and which is kind of just the whole reason to go to raves. I mean, you could sit at home and listen to dance music and enjoy it, right? But if you want to go there and be a part of that community, it's the vibe or whatever that you're taking part of is just like, you can be whoever you want to be. You dance however you want to dance. Nobody's judging you. Nobody cares. You can be overweight and you can wear pasties and a thong. And
actually, yeah,
nobody cares.
One of my things I love about it so much is I'll see this girl walking. She's like 5'5", probably weighs 250 pounds, just like very large. And she's got on black little booty shorts, some pasties, and she's walking. Mm-hmm. And you can see every roll on her body. And she just IDGAF. She's just walking. And it's like, even though that's not like my personal preference of something that's sexy and appealing, I love it that she's doing that. And she's confident. She feels comfortable doing that. Everyone, I'm like, it's a powerful thing to see someone just be able to be that comfortable with everyone and not have to worry about it.
It's like the antithesis of shame, just to be like, this is me.
I actually, one thing I've always liked is I love breaking stereotypes. Like, I love being the dentist who's not wearing a braided belt with my polo shirt tucked in when I'm walking out to dinner and stuff like that.
I like how Carson went back to like the 90s with the braided belt. Yeah. I don't think they were wearing braided belt and mock boots, right? The Jabot jeans.
You maybe don't hang out enough dentists because there's still a lot of dentists sporting the braided belt. Maybe Seattle dentists. But it's I just, whenever someone has an expectation that I'm going to be a certain way, I like to like let them know, like, no, you don't have to have that. And so I will sometimes intentionally, when we go, I'll wear something that like is just on that fine border between straight and not straight, to where someone's like, they can't quite tell, is he straight or not? And I like making people have to wonder and think like that.
All right, now I want to know, what's that line? Like, what would be the signature or some tell?
So, I wore
the glitter beard, maybe?
That's got more popular. Like, Reese has this gay friend for my 40th birthday. He gave me this really fuzzy, white, furry, sleeveless vest with lights in it and a hoodie. And I put a light, really bright unicorn horn in it. And so I walked around dressed as a white furry unicorn. And it was just like, it didn't look super, it wasn't like very feminine outfit. It was just like a little trippy and crazy, to where like I felt comfortable wearing it. But like, I know it made people wonder. They're like,
yeah. See, I do love the visual of Carson in a white furry whited up vest with a hoodie and a unicorn. It's just like, yeah, man, let's do that. I'm all in on that.
So like, everyone wears like tennis shoes. Like, you could wear like this super sparkly, I don't know, like even a pretty costume, and you would wear tennis shoes because you're going to be on your feet for 8 to 12 hours.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, and jumping, and nobody, you want to be able to dance. That's really why you go. And
it's like two things that's kind of funny is like, sometimes I'll sit back and just took our kids to a, what's called the Night Nation run, where it's like a rave and a 5K run, and our kids want to go. They wish they could go to all of it. So they were happy to be able to go and do it with us. And as I'm standing back watching them, I'm like, this is, in a way, I can see why people think that it's stupid and we're stupid, because it's just a bunch of people standing there with their hand, one or two hands, and they're jumping up and down. It's like, if you look at it like that, it does seem kind of stupid. But the irony is, and like, this is a story that I like to share, and maybe shared with you previously, but it's like, in Mormonism, they talk about Zion and Zion community, where the all of one heart. And I've actually teared up and cried at a rave a few times, where I'm like in the middle of this huge crowd and the song's coming, it's building this beat drop. And so it's like, people are just waiting. And then all of a sudden they have beat drop. Everyone jumps up and down, and they all are jumping in unison to the beat.
Thousands and thousands tens of thousands people, of people.
Just happy, like happy as can be. And I'm like so happy with my, like, especially the festivals more than the club, because you're with your like little rave fam or your best friends. You're all together. You're so happy. And it's like, and as much as I want to get Mormonism out of my head, I kind of hate but love that this thought comes in at this time. I'm like, this is my Zion. We are all of one heart. There's no judgment. Everyone's here. It's happy. And it's like, just my heart is just so big. And it's like, I'm like, tear it up as I'm jumping up and down dancing. But it's
you
like,
you can't help it. Like, you just love all the people. Like, the Carson puts me up on his shoulders, and like, you look around. Like, when we went to EDC, there's 400,000 people there. I mean, that's just like insane. But, you know, maybe on the main stage at any given time, there's 100,000 people all dancing to the same music at the same time. And it's just like you kind of love the whole world in that moment. There's nothing like it.
That's the hook. That's what makes it more fun, because we love the music. You know, we love the bright lights and all that. But just going there, being a part of that community, that's our new community.
It seems like a real commitment. I mean, this is a hobby. Yeah. This is your thing, right? Some people ski or, I don't know, whatever someone's hobby thing. This is a time and money commitment. Yeah.
Yeah. You plan your vacation around it, and it's what you're looking forward to.
So how many weekends, and maybe confirmation bias, but I'm like, man, these guys are at a show every weekend. I'm impressed.
Every weekend. I thought you were going to say every night.
No, I thought so there are times where it will be Friday, Saturday night, and then another weekend the following. I mean, you've had consecutive weekends at these multiple times.
That's an understatement, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I feel kind of guilty.
We go out, I would say, almost every Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and sometimes Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday. I mean, really, like probably 5 nights a week.
Sometimes 5 nights a week.
Some weeks, 5 nights a week.
So, yeah. But the problem is, it's like Wednesday, our favorite club here is called Foundation. Mm-hmm. They have this bass night where they bring in really heavy bass. So it's like we go on Wednesday, which is kind of hard because I have to leave early because I have to get up for work the next day, but we still go.
Mm-hmm.
And then another club will have these awesome Thursday night events, and then mm-hmm. Friday and Saturday. So it's like there's so much going on here. Well, I don't
snap. We can almost always get in for free. Because they have guest lists, and they like to get people in before 11 p.m. And so we just message our friends, get in for free on guest list. And another good thing about it is that since it starts later, we can still like have dinner with our kids, you know, so we're spending time with them, and then we go out, you know, at 10 or 11 p.m. So it's kind of, we can do a little bit best of both worlds.
I try not to snap every time I go out, because I'm like, everyone's got to get tired of the same 10-second snap of some DJ. You can't hear very well.
Music.
Wednesday, Friday, Saturday.
Right.
But we actually had a goal, because, you know, there's this song, Drake remixes it, called, I forget the name of it, but it's about clubbing on a Tuesday night.
Oh,
and
at the club on a Tuesday.
Yeah, we had a goal to make sure we had clubbed on every night, and like a year or so ago, we'd hit that. Yeah. Every night of the week, we've actually been to a club dancing. So
my main question is, how do you physically do it? It seems like that would just be so physically taxing.
Yeah.
It basically is my exercise. I mean, I used to go for a run almost every morning, and now I go dancing 3, 4, 5 nights a week.
I lifted really hard for like 4 years, and then it was like part of my therapy as the exit from the church. I just lifted. It felt so good. And then once we got into the scene, I actually have lifted like 2 times, 3 times in the last 2 years. It's just, but we both feel like we have really good quads and glutes all that dancing. So.
Right. Yeah. And your calf work. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And my right arm. It's really good.
So buff.
Oh, that's great.
Are you tired the next day? Like just worn out? Just for
after festivals, yes. After club nights, no.
Yeah. Well, and I'm kind of
wake up and get the kids to school, and you feel great.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I'm kind of lucky in that I have an associate at my office, and I would rather make less money and work less often. So I work 3 days a week, and don't make it as much as most of the dentists in the area, just because I would prefer to have that free time. And so it enables us to be able to do more and then not be sacrificing with the kids and the other responsibilities we have to do. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And we sometimes plan sleeping in or taking naps. Like if I have to get up and get the kids off to school, then like if it's on Friday and he's not working, then we'll just plan to sleep later.
So talk about the culture and your people, your group, kind of how you found them and what they mean to you and how it's become your pack.
It's kind of, has been a progression, but we met some people, that were ex-Mormon that were into clubbing and had been to some raves before. And like, we went out to a venue that's kind of rave-ish, but also just, it's just local here. It's kind of just like a dance club. And, this one girl was making fun of me for wearing jeans. And she's like, and we had already signed up for one of the bigger raves that was at the Tacoma Dome the next month. And she looks at me, she's like, you're not going to wear that to the rave, are you? And I was like, I don't know. I was just wearing like jeans and a t-shirt. And so I just didn't know that, you know, that nobody wears that. And it's so weird that it's weird.
Which
it's
is funny.
To wear jeans. Like that's not normal.
Our 16-year-old will watch us walk out and he's like, Mom, you're not going to go on public dressed like that, are you? And she's like, mm-hmm. No, I'm going to the rave. But if I wore jeans and t-shirt, everyone would look at me like you're looking at me wearing this right now.
Right.
It's all just time and place, like that environment that you're in. And, but you do, you look crazy and then you get there and everybody else looks crazy. And so you're like, oh, it's just normal. So we met.
We all have our uniforms, right? Every group has our uniform. Exactly.
The tribal uniform is true.
That's right.
We met some people, started going to a couple of things, but then what really made the difference is that we met this girl, Vanessa, who used to be Jehovah's Witness. And so we started talking to her. We just met her, like, from a friend of a friend. And she's just super into raving. And she had a bunch of rave friends, and we had already signed up for the next rave because we'd been to a few dance clubs, and we're like, hey, what's that? That looks fun. And so we signed up for the rave called Lucky, which is in March. It's around St. Patrick's Day.
All right, let me interrupt you. Dance club festival rave.
Good point. Clarify that. So I think we actually don't love calling the festivals raves. They kind of started out as raves. That was like where everyone would get together, listen to music and all that. It was more underground, which still happens. We've been to some of those, but the festivals are a lot more produced, a lot more higher end, you know, it's all coordinated and everything. We kind of like that better.
A real like traditional rave is like underground, like literally in a warehouse or something. And you don't have a lot of lights. The speaker system might not be that great. And you probably have to bring your own alcohol. And like, that's a real rave. And like, we've been to some of those and some people are like diehard fans of those. But what people often call raves right now are these kind of bigger events that are put on by big companies, and they bring in big DJs and they have huge sound systems and lights and you wear the whole thing.
Yeah.
People still call it raving.
But yeah, it's a festival. And so,
well, that's not necessarily a music festival. That's an event.
That's true.
Because the music festivals are usually more than one day, right? And
so multiple stages.
Yes. Yeah. Multiple stages. And
like Coachella.
Yeah. And like we have a local one that's out of the gorge. It's called Paradiso. We've been to EDC twice in Las Vegas. That's Electric Daisy Carnival. It's the biggest one in the U.S.
Right. That's like the United States of Ibiza, right? Like.
Yeah. And I mean, but it's really just one weekend though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you have the clubs that'll be like the local clubs that'll be, you'll go to listen to music. So you can go to a festival, a rave, an event, a club. Those are all the different ways where you can go and experience the music. And the club is more, the festival and raves is more like group activity, I think of it. Whereas the clubs is more like dating your partner or whatever, less, rave fam, like
you. Gotcha. Group.
Yeah.
So you were back. So Vanessa was a close friend. She was Jehovah's Witness, and you guys went to a right. You were at a rave. Yeah. Sorry, I want to catch you back up.
Like she we understood each other, right? Because we both come from this like conservative background. We're both like kind of estranged from our old friends and family. And so she was like, oh, you guys are going to Lucky's. Let's all go together. You guys can come with my rave fam. And we're like, what's a rave fam? You know, we were just going to show up. I don't know. And so we started hanging out with her and like understanding the culture better and getting to know all her friends that also go. And so we kind of got adopted into their rave family. But all of the rest of them are just like never most, right? So that's just what's so fun is it's just like, and now we can just like kind of leave that behind us and just go and find people that love the same thing as us. And they come from a variety of different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Which has transitioned. We actually have we still have some ex-Mormon friends, but the large majority of our friends are never most because of that.
It's what you call them, your group, your, was it a squad? Is it a group? Yeah. Is it a crew? Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. I usually like to say rave fam just because I like to think of us family, like Vanessa,
like a family. Yeah.
Little sister. She's a lot younger than us. And
yeah,
she just like, we know, like she'll get in drama with her parents saying, you know, she's come back to Jehovah's Witness and she's being an evil person for going to this, these music festivals and stuff. And so like, we can connect, we know what that's, that pain is like to have your parents see what you do as bad and your family and stuff. So we connect on that, and then we can go there, and her and all of her friends are all in the medical community as well. Most of them are travel nurses. So it's kind of fun to go there, be with people that are like, they're just fun, smart, free. And
yeah, they have a real job, but they love doing it. They plan their life around the music festivals and stuff. Just
so now, are these the people? If there's not a show, not a festival, they're coming out hanging out. These are the people you're doing dinner with as well, or is it primarily tied to hanging out at the clubs or the festivals and stuff?
I would say it depends. Some of them we really only see at festivals. Some of them we just hang out with regularly, and we have other friends that aren't really into raving that we also just hang out with. You know, so yeah. We do have a variety now.
And the nice thing about it now is we've been in it for a couple of years that we know enough people. Like every time we go, we're running into people, and it's like,
yeah. So it feels like home, kind of. You know, you go to this event, and all your friends are there.
I want to talk about some of the criticisms you've gotten, because one of the things that I really respect is you guys are really open about your life and your lifestyle, saying this is us, this is our hobby, this is what we're into. Suck it. I mean, that's essentially the attitude that's what I perceive, and I love it. I mean,
I feel like we already ripped that Band-Aid off, right? Like,
yeah.
There was that moment where Carson wanted to post this huge long blog post about why we didn't believe in the church anymore, and I was like, oh, are we really going to be so public about it? And then just got to that point where, like, fuck it. Like, let's just do it. And so we, ever since then, I don't know, it's kind of like we have nothing to lose, right? Everybody already hates us. Might as well just post what we're really doing.
And authenticity is addicting, man. Mm-hmm. You like be a little authentic, and then you get some, you're going to have the haters, but I think the haters are stupid, so I don't care what they say. But all these other people I like, they respond really well. The more authentic I am, then the more comfortable they feel being open. And then you're both being more open with each other and connecting more, and you have that stronger connection. And that's I love that feeling. So it makes it, I think just having left Mormonism thinking, you know what? I don't know. I don't know how to say this nicely, but like, yeah, you guys can think what you want. That's stupid for me. And so I don't have to feel any pressure to make you guys happy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make these people happy over here. And the more that I'm open, authentic, the easier that is to keep doing.
What are some of the most fair criticisms that you've gotten?
I think people definitely say that we're too old to do it.
Well, that's not true.
That's not a fair criticism. That's bullshit.
It's not fair.
Which shocked us, because when we went, we thought that would be the case, because the fair part of the criticism is the majority are younger, for sure.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of people way older than us, and I love it. I'll go, like, we met this guy, his name's Tuna. He's a retired Microsoft guy. We met him at a beach party a few weeks ago.
He's like 50-something.
Yeah, he's like 55. He shows up in his cargo shorts and his polo shirt, and he's like, he's a computer programmer, and he's like, we're talking, and we're like, oh yeah, we got to leave or something, because we're going to go to Foundation, the club tonight. He's like, oh, you guys go there, me too. And we're like, what? And he's like, yeah, I go to all the festivals and raves. And I'm like, really? Like, what music do you like? And he's like, I like Getter. Sorry, there's a reason why I said Getter. But he's like, Getter. And like, Getter's pretty hard EDM,
it's like
hard bass.
What we were talking about with like the really dirty bass and like some hip-hop influence. And
I'm like, no way, dude, you're this like 55-year-old dude who listens to this hard music. And it's just like, I'm no longer the old dude that listens to hard bass music. It's like him, yeah. 15 years down the road from me. And so there's plenty of people like that. So I love it.
Cause I'll admit, man, when Chris and I have talked about going, and they do a few of these in the Valley, it's not quite as well, but there's the smaller clubs here that you can get one almost every week here in Arizona, I've noticed. And we've almost gone a couple times, and the age has been a barrier. We've been like, I used to go to the Aquabats concerts back in the day, like post mission. Man, even at 25, 26, I felt like I was a grandpa there. So I've had that experience before. This feels like another level. So that has been a barrier. But what I hear you saying is push through, just go, huh?
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of a difficulty like getting over the hump. You know, like I recognize that I used to feel a little bit more that way, like a little more self-conscious, I guess. And I think that just like having a lot of friends there and then just getting over it where you just realize that you just really don't care. You know, that's over time, I feel like zero self-consciousness about it anymore. I'm just like, I like it. I paid to be here. This is my thing. Like, I don't care if you guys all think I'm too old. I like it.
And especially if you're into it, because I had this guy come up to me. I think the more into it you are, the younger you look in a way, or you don't stand out as old. And this guy comes up to me, he's like, dude, you look like you're having so much fun. I can't wait to, I'm doing this at your age. How old are you? And I was like, are you like 30? And I'm like, no, dude, I'm like, I'm 40.
31.
Oh yeah. He's like, no way. Like, he's like 21. He's like, I thought you were 30 years old. So that's awesome. I can have to do this for 20 years and be as cool as you. So.
Well, and sometimes awesome. I find that we just have like lost so much of our self-consciousness over the past few years that, which I think happens to a lot of people as they get older, right? They become comfortable with themselves and
yeah,
go through difficult things. You realize you didn't die and you're going to be all right. So I think sometimes we have like, so we enjoy dancing and like looking at each other and being ridiculous and whatever. And we just like are really into each other. And I feel like sometimes people are staring at us and they're thinking like, why are those people different or whatever? And I've started to like become proud of it where I feel like I earned that, you know, like I've been through so much by now. Like we've been married for 18 years. Like all you know, 20-year-olds, like you can look up to that. You can hope you can be that somebody. You just don't have the experience literally to have the connection that we have. And like, I feel good about it. We earned it.
And they love it. They recognize it too. Well, there's like, sounds a little arrogant, but like we almost every festival have a couple people stop us and they're like, what you guys have, they don't know us. We have no idea who they are. They'll just tell us. We can tell what you guys have is so amazing. You guys love each other so much. I hope to have that someday. And like, I love that. Like when you know that someone, they can see that connection and they don't even know you, but they see it strong enough that it makes them stop and say something. It's like, we love it.
It makes you feel good because it's effort, right? Because like, we worked really damn hard to be there. So
I guess even though that they can tell we're older, and they see that, they kind of respect that. So it's not a negative. It can be kind of a positive.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think some of the other, like, people always say, like, you're listening to all that loud music, you're going to be deaf in 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but we always wear earplugs. And there's actually really nice, high-quality earplugs you can wear. And so we do that. And you can tell there's, at first when we did that, I felt like, oh, am I going to look like the nerd, like the dude wearing, the one kid wearing the helmet when he's riding around all the other kids who don't have helmets on. He's safe, but he's the nerd.
Right.
I felt like it'd be like that, but it's like, you'll see there, the large majority of the people, especially people that have been
doing it. People that go on a regular, they wear earplugs.
And nice.
Yeah. You got to, man. I mean,
And the purpose, I think they turn the music up that loud isn't because you really like to hear it that loud.
Right.
Even when the young people don't like it, but it makes it so you can feel the music. So you put the headphones in or the earplugs, you
can still hear it plenty loud
and at a good level, and then you're feeling it, and it increases the experience.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Another go ahead.
Oh, another criticism or thing that people say is that, like, I don't understand how you party that much, like because they're imagining that we are like getting super crazy drunk or doing all kinds of crazy things every time we go out.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they like to do, and so they can only do it once a week. So, but if you don't, if you have a couple drinks, not, you know, if you don't get wasted, then you're not hurting the next day so badly, and so you can go out again the next day, you know.
Keep it easy. I did want to talk about, I don't know if you've gotten this criticism, Marisa, but I suspect that it's, you're at least aware of it, of the really what amounts to slut shaming and body shaming and, hey, look at the stuff that you're wearing. It's provocative. It's, you know, you're showing your body. Can you talk about that? Posting on Facebook.
Are you friends with your parents on Facebook? Oh yeah.
What about your kids' friends and those types of things? Are these all things you've either heard or certainly aware of?
Oh yeah, for sure. And even when we first started going out, it was my son, my oldest son, that was like, hold up, you're not going out of the house wearing that, are you? For me, it just has been, it's been such a transition from Mormonism, right? Like from this, like the whole modesty culture. And it's been so freeing to, like, at the very beginning, just to wear a tank top, right? And not like, and just show your shoulders and then just remember how good it feels to feel the sunshine on my shoulders. And then just from there, you know, realizing like, hey, I don't know, how much of me I show off is not what's inside of me. It doesn't mean I'm going to sleep with you. Like, and if you think that, you're a douchebag. Like, it's, I don't know. I can wear whatever I want to do, and it actually has nothing to do with you, someone else, or, you know? And yeah. So for me, I just started to feel like I don't care. Like, I don't know. And
you don't see it as a bad thing. We don't see it if you can see some cleavage on her or a midriff or whatever, that is a bad thing.
Yeah. You know? It's just me. It's just my body. And I'm just here having a good time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But when I show my midriff, it's not the same story.
That's true. It's double standards, man.
Yeah.
But you know, that, and I know we talk about it all the time, especially the differences between men and women and as a transition is Kristen wants to just be comfortable. And, you know, the big topic, even just going out and about, is about not wearing a bra, and who cares?
Yeah,
you know,
I just don't. I don't care.
You know, at some point, but you still.
I sometimes do. I'm like, I hope people aren't, because people stare.
Yeah.
Like, I walk down the aisle in the grocery store, and there's men staring, and I'm like, dude. So yeah, I talk about it. I don't care, but it's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to deal with the repercussions of that cultural repression. It's making them react in that way, and then it makes you uncomfortable, and so it's like, yeah. You definitely take that into consideration.
But in many ways, I feel like there's been a couple themes here, which is going in full board, basically not, you know, owning whatever you're doing. And you did that right away by the excommunication kind of forced it in, I guess, being one way and not gradually having one foot in and one foot out. But then even with this, with owning it and posting it and saying, yeah, that's me. There seems to be some real, again, power and some freedom in doing that.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think that's just been the whole like thing that we found in the past couple of years, is just that exciting freedom to be ourselves. I'm like, that's the tattoo I got. It says free to be me. And there's a woman that used to be on my ward that I saw at the park a year ago or something. And she goes, what's your tattoo say? And I said, hold up, free to be me. She's like, oh, of course it does. You know? And I'm like, okay, listen to yourself. Like,
right.
Do you have a problem with that? Because really, like, what are you believing if you have a problem with that? But in a way, that's what we all used to believe, right? Is that you should think and feel a certain way, that who you really are on the inside is somehow not okay. And that's been, like, just with everything we've done with therapy and, like, even just branching out, going to raves, making new friends, in everything that we are trying to do in our lives, it's like we can just finally be ourselves for the first time in our lives.
And I'm interested that you mentioned kind of therapy, and has therapy been a part of this process as well?
Definitely.
Yeah, we started going to see a therapist a little bit before we left the church, and I feel like that was it helped me, I guess, gain the confidence to just be like, okay, this is actually what I really feel. And I am going to leave the church, even though it's really painful and difficult. And
our therapist had us do that. Our therapist gave us the ability to be in touch with ourselves a little more, mm-hmm. and to have a strong sense of self so that we could be comfortable with whatever our decisions were.
Yeah.
So.
Otherwise I might've been just too scared, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it started with that, with I think just becoming stronger individuals. And then as it was so helpful to just have that therapist, like just have kind of every 3 weeks or so scheduled with her as we were going through like the next year, losing all of our friends, getting a lot of lashback, eventually being excommunicated, moving on, like through all of that, like we just kept like regular appointments because there was always something that we had to talk about. And so I think that was super helpful. And also then you just have this whole internal crisis going along with it. You know, for me, it was, wait, I was going to go get a PhD, but then I decided not to. I decided to have a baby when I was 21 instead. And now I'm just like, I'm off track and I'm frustrated about that. You know, there's just so many parts of leaving the church where you have an identity crisis in some ways. Right. And so just navigating through all of that, like, I mean, we listen to a ton of books, like we, you know, use our Audible account a lot, but in addition to that, having a therapist has just really been priceless. I feel like I've seen other people try to do it without therapy, and I think it takes a lot longer and is more painful and difficult.
You don't know what you don't know, so it's so nice to have that.
Totally agree. Yeah,
like, you know that it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
everyone should do it. Like when my kids get married, I don't know if I'm gonna give it to them as a wedding present when they get married, or maybe after a year, so they've had some time to work through marriage a little bit. But it's like, I want to give them a year worth of marital therapy and stuff, because it's like, it changes your life for the better in so many ways.
Well, and I totally echo that, and I have been pitching that's by not doing that and by just staying in these Mormon groups and podcasts and using that as therapy, it's just prolonged the process for too many people, rather than ripping the band-aid off and getting some real world shit and working through stuff and figuring out what things mean for you and for you as a couple, and really getting insight from people that know. really know.
You have to get the Mormonism out of your head, right? Like, yeah. Whatever core beliefs are, like, about yourself or about life that you have that you now want to get out, it's difficult. And if you don't proactively do something about it, they're just going to linger inside of you. And you're going to realize 20 years down the road that you still have this like core belief that in your head you don't really agree with anymore, but it still is affecting you and your decisions in your life.
Yeah.
So it's like a purge kind of.
Now, I think I know the answer to this, or I know what my answer would be to it, but what do you tell people when they ask about the impact it's having on the kids, or the message that you're sending to the kids?
That's good. I think the funny thing I usually say at first is the crazier we've gotten, the more conservative it's made our kids go, because they see us walking out in these outfits are like, you guys are crazy, I'm not doing that. And then so they're like, they actually are. I think it's made them, it takes away the taboo. It's not this thing that they want to try because they can't, you know. They will you say you can, you know, do that, and it's fine, just talk to us, and then they're okay with it. So that's kind of nice. But at the same time, what's wrong with being authentic, loving yourself, loving other people for whoever they are, enjoying music and going out and spending time with other people, having a drink with friends responsibly? It's like most people that push back see that as bad, since we don't. Like our new moral system, probably the best way of explaining it, our new moral system is being kind and honest. And if there's something that we want to do that falls within being kind and honest, for the most part, we're going to be okay with it. And so that's how we feel about it.
When the little kids, like our 16-year-old son, he might be like, my parents are ravers, that's so weird. But our little kids, our 7 and 10-year-olds, like, they don't care, right? Like my 7-year-old last year, as I was preparing my EDC outfits, she somehow was just like saying, you know, trying to figure out life. She's like, well, what do moms do when they're home during the day? They like do the laundry and like make their rave outfits. And
like, that's great.
You know, they don't know any different. And to them, it's just like fun music, fun people. Like, why wouldn't we do that? Right.
Yeah.
Like, play the music around the house. They love it. Like, we took them to this thing last week that was a 5K, and they're all dancing around, and like, they're authentic because they don't know how to be any different. They haven't learned to put on masks yet. You know, they're not shown
right.
by the bigger culture. So it's like, they just think it's fun.
But also what I love about you guys though, is you're doing it together. You're happy. You seem really happy, and your kids see that. I'm sure you get, you know, bad comments, but really, like, we've seen that too. Like, when we hang out and are blasting music and wearing crazy things at our house, like, our kids know we're having fun together and we love each other.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
well, I think
great.
The big negative is that it's obvious that there's a big connection between the rave culture and drug culture. And so people are afraid, oh, if you're doing that, are you condoning that? Are you encouraging kids to go do that?
You're going
to
become a drug addict.
I was just going to say, you stepped on my line. I was going to say, let's talk about the pupil dilated elephant in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is. It's like, you can't deny it. It's a huge part of the culture. Just because it's there doesn't mean you have to do it, but you see it all the time.
Let's talk about that. When we're talking about drug culture, I think a lot of people do understand, but that means so much. And there tends to be a specific subset of substances that are tied to this community. Is that fair?
I strongly agree. Like, this has been a huge eye opener for me that I'll see people that use drugs regularly, like at clubs or festivals, and they refer to other people as druggies because they don't consider themselves to be a druggie, because a druggie is someone that is addicted to heroin or meth, right? And
some crackhead who's like tweaked out on the street. That's when they say druggie, that's what they're referring to. And I'm like, wait, when that, like that, some people said, I'm like, wait, you do drugs all the time and you're saying they're druggy, but then like we understood that difference and see what they mean.
So let's do that. Let's break down the difference between those. How do you distinguish between, say, club drugs versus something that wouldn't be considered club drug? You've already distinguished between like meth, heroin, crack, mm-hmm. Kind of those things those are not typically going to be found, yeah, at least intentionally at a festival or a rave, right, setting, right?
We have several friends that do some of that stuff regularly, and I actually still to this day do not know a single person in real life that has ever done heroin, crack, any of those things like that. Mm-hmm. When some of them are doing it all the time, most of the stuff that they're doing will be the MDMA, which is either like a, and if it's in a capsule form, it's called ecstasy, which you'll hear about a lot, or if it's in a powder in a pill form, a press tab is, sorry,
ecstasy,
and in the capsule, it's Molly, the nickname,
right.
And so you'll see, that's the main one, or if people do a lot of hallucinogenics, which has been mind-blowing to me, is like talking with some of them as they explain it, because I have like, I know a lot of nurses, a few even physicians that do it, and as they talk about it, they're like, these things, and I didn't believe them at first, but they're like, they're not addictive. They can't, they're not chemically addictive. They can be emotionally addictive, like shopping, mm-hmm, addicted to that, but they're like, they're not damaging your body. And then now I think is with the marijuana.
They have no physiological risks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I've seen that. It's kind of amazing. It's like, they do it. I think they do it mainly because it enhances the experience for them. So it's, mm-hmm, like, we go, for me, the contrast with Mormonism, just being, like I was saying, being there free, being able to be authentic, is just so amazing. Like, we're loving that. But they don't, a lot of them, I think, don't have that contrast. And so they'll be like, to augment that experience for them, they'll be taking those things that make the lights brighter, that make, what do they say?
Well, and like, sometimes people need something to get in the moment, you know? And, but for me, like great music and one drink, and I'm in the moment, you know?
Yeah. So we're talking about substances that are kind of going to enhance auditory and visual. They're going to be auditory and visually distortive, right? And so they're going to, yeah, enhance all those things.
And make you, and release, serotonin.
Serotonin.
Make people a lot of love, which I kind of, mm-hmm, like, that's another reason why I kind of don't hate that so much, because we go to the country music festival and everyone's getting shit faced on alcohol and drinking a ton, and all these fights are breaking out. Everyone's, yeah, getting all testosterone-y and, yeah, fighting with each other. You go to the rave and I've never seen a single fight.
It's a totally different environment.
The problem is, it gets annoying that so many people are giving me hugs as they're walking by me. Like, that's the problem. Because everyone loves everyone so much there. It's kind of cute to see, but it's like,
well, and rave culture isn't a hookup culture. And so that's nice too. Like,
oh, that's a really good point. Cause I think the perception is especially if, when you're talking about ecstasy, there's people who think that that's a sex drug.
Yeah.
And that's a misperception.
Totally.
I mean, maybe people use it that way, but like, it's not like when you're doing that, like at the club, at the festival, everyone just wants to like touch. It's like this very touchy, non-sexual. Whereas like, if I go to a dance club and like a lot of people are drinking, then like, I'll just have super random guys touch me sexually, like just walking past me, right? Like, mm-hmm, I mean, it's just a completely, like, that literally never happens at a rave. I could be wearing like next to nothing at a rave and I just don't get creeped on in that way.
Yeah, and that's great.
Yeah, so it's just, it's such a like an environment of like, of friendliness and inclusiveness. And even if people go with their like significant other or whatever, like, it's, there's not this like, I don't know how to describe it. There's not this like, I don't want to say sexuality, because I don't think sexuality is bad, right?
Right.
It's like, it's the sexual predatoriness that I don't like. And that's just completely absent at raves, and I love it.
Well, that's great that you can then wear whatever you want and be comfortable and be half naked. And it's not like somebody's looking at me, because that's, yes, you know, that's freeing.
When even if they are looking at you, it is like, look at that amazing outfit and how she looked.
Yeah.
Or they're like,
oh, wow, that's so soft. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It feels like a very safe environment for you.
Totally. Yeah.
Huh. That's great.
Everybody watches out for each other. It's, if anybody is ever like, looks like they're in trouble in some way, like they might be throwing up or whatever, or like even like a part of your outfit's coming off or whatever, like, everybody's just there to help. Like, it's been an awesome thing to see, like, in the bathrooms, people, girls are, oh, girl, are you okay? Like people are just so friendly and helpful. And I want to say more than I ever got at church. Like, I think that people are so comfortable with themselves that there's no competition. They're not like, oh my God, look at her. Her skirt's riding up in the back or whatever. Like, it's just like everybody wants to completely help everybody else. And like, it's a great
environment. Yeah, and I think kind of bring it back around to the point of the pushback we'll get from people and the fear. People don't talk enough about that drug culture. And I kind of wish they would, because what happens is you have, like, I hear people, there's a couple of groups that go to the festivals and they hand out papers and cards and postcards that has information about how to do a lot of those things safely. Mm-hmm. So as I've read them over and I see that, one of the big phrases that I really love is, instead of saying, just say no, N-O, it's just say no, K-N-O-W. Because if that information got out there, we've only, like, one time we saw a girl at a festival get a seizure. Go into a seizure and come to find out the reason why she did the seizure wasn't because of the chemicals she had taken. It's because she drank in too much water and trying to compensate. And
she had the bad idea that if you do MDMA, that you should drink a ton of water. So she drank like 1.5 gallons of water.
She drank so much, she diluted the electrolytes basically in her brain and went into having seizures because of that. And so it's like,
And I've heard, especially specifically with MDMA, the most common problems or consequences are either not enough water while dancing or over consuming water. So it's not the substance itself.
Exactly.
They just get into this, they're not smart. They're not turning their brains on. You know, they just, you're sweating a ton. You're dancing for hours and hours on end. Like, you have to take care of your body.
Yeah. And what I hear, the term I hear is risk prevention technique. So there's risk to anything we do, you know, to anything people do. That's why we have seatbelts and other things like that in cars, but that there are other techniques like you talked about, being responsible with water and not staying out and you know, never taking a break for 8 hours straight and just be dancing and to exhaustion and those types of things. There are risk prevention techniques for these things, as I understand it.
Totally. Yeah. And the irony is, alcohol is way worse than a lot of those things. It's like, I don't know, that's just what drives me nuts. Like, so many people are so okay with alcohol, and it's neurotoxic. It's damaging their body and their brain. They're doing stupid things. Like, I don't know. That's one thing is, like, I try and drink, and we be careful. We enjoy drinking, but we try and keep it to a couple drinks. Marisa has a 3-drink limit on the whole, like, on a whole night.
I'm just a lightweight, so
her body, and like, I can drink a little more, but like, we don't drink more than that because we see so many people doing stupid things, and on all that stuff, it is more about having that harm prevention, being a user, not an abuser, is another phrase I like. So yeah, it's good.
Well, and there's just so much to be said for moderation, right? With all of it. Like, just don't be stupid. I don't know. And like, when we go to festivals, the longer ones, we wear like the hydration packs and we put electrolyte drops in them. And so you always have your water on you, because you might be in the middle of a crowd of 100,000 people and it's going to take you like an hour to go to the bathroom and get refill your water, and you might get lost from each other. You know, I mean, you have to be smart. You have to be prepared.
Right. Huh. See, that's where the age comes in. That's the responsibility.
It's actually a benefit.
It's kind of nice going into the scene at 37 and 34, however old you were.
Yeah.
Teach these kids how to do it right.
we're like the rave mom and dad for like all of our friends that go that are in their 20s.
But just don't call us mom and dad.
Yeah, no. We'll keep you guys safe.
So do you see you guys slowing down anytime soon?
We keep talking about it and then not doing it.
Yeah, I thought we would be by now. It's the thing is, what's happened is it's become more of our community because we know enough people, and now we don't have. A lot of times we can like get into clubs for free. We can get on the guest list with people that work there and stuff. So it makes it easier, and we've learned things that make it more comfortable. And so,
yeah, we always have our earplugs with us. I don't wear high heels, you know, because I go to dance. Like, we just know all the things now. And so it's just like easy. It's close.
All right. So let's get into it. Tips, raver 101 etiquette and tips.
So definitely.
I would say, we heard water. The packs seem to be like a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. There's like, there's, you can just wear a camelback. They have special ones for raves, but.
So I have a really funny thing about that. So like a lot of people go and they will sneak their drugs in. We actually have snuck drugs in, but it was Advil for our really old bodies because Advil is right there. So if you're older and you need that, that's a tip.
So the younger kids slip the Molly and the stimulants in. The old folks slip in the Advil and the Tums.
Have a sore back. Sneaking some ibuprofen for yourself.
That's great.
So it's like that irony there is just like, it's too funny.
Yeah. So like the high heels, people wear them to dance clubs, but nobody wears them to a rave. I've just given up on wearing them all together unless I'm going to go out to dinner and sit the entire time. Because I really go to dance. And so definitely get yourself some comfortable shoes. Also, don't wear super nice shoes because they're going to get dirty, super dirty. And I would say to try, if you're going to wear any sort of costume, like try it all on beforehand because some of that stuff is just itchy. Like you don't want anything restrictive. Don't wear a push-up bra. Like you can't even breathe. You know, just you need to wear something that's comfortable. I mean, you literally will see a lot of girls wearing just a sports bra. And if they don't want to like dress up and do the whole candy kid thing, like now a lot of people almost just wear exercise clothes because you really just want to go and have fun and it's breathable and it's stretchy. And, you know, wear like, I put foam pads inside my sneakers, even though like I wear my like best quality running shoes to the longer raves. I still wear foam pads and really good socks.
Yeah, because like at EDC both years, I have my phone tracking like how much movement we're doing and stuff like that app. And I had the equivalent of the number of steps you take in a marathon both times. So it's like you are walking.
Doing real work on your body, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually work out before, like we
trained for it.
It kicked our ass last year. And so this year, like, all right, we're gonna run, we're gonna go up and down the stairs a lot to build our glutes and quads up so then when we go, we can actually survive the 3 days and not look like a 40-year-old man who can't handle it. So
yeah.
Made a difference. Yeah.
Now you mentioned something early on, you kind of said there was this and I just didn't understand completely, is this there seems to be this shift towards kind of maybe older or more established ravers versus the candy kids, which is the wild stuff, but the older costumes are a little more reserved. Did I get that right?
So I think that's more like a lot of those people don't go to raves. And so they're more just going to dance clubs. They love EDM, but they're kind of just like they love what was popular 20 years ago, and they don't want to wear like anything crazy. They just think that's childish, and maybe because that's literally what they did when they were children, right?
I see. Now they're just older. But you're not going to get that. Like, is there should anyone feel self-conscious about they wear? Are there any rules with regards to that where they're completely out of place? Because I've seen the gamut, and you just wonder if you're – anyway, is my question clear?
Yeah.
Anything to avoid?
That nothing really formal is that, like, the only thing that's going to look out of place is if you're wearing, like, slacks and a button-up shirt, right?
Or a braided belt.
You actually have seen, yeah.
A braided belt.
Yeah.
Don't wear those.
Loafers, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would say that if you literally, like, have no idea what else to wear, just wear, like, your most comfortable, like, casual, like, basketball shorts and a t-shirt for men, nobody cares. Like, you don't have to dress up, but just wear something that's comfortable and casual.
And even if you like it and do, like, you've seen, like, I like wearing a little bit of candy. I'll do a little bit, not for a ton, but you'll see the people where it's going up their entire arm. They have the cuffs of the candy all the way up the belt because they just love trading it with each other and stuff like that. And which is actually something that is kind of cool is a lot of times when you do trade the candy, the big acronym for the whole scene is PLUR, peace, love, unity, and respect. And so you have this little bracelet, and you'll run into someone and you're like, if I ran into you and you're, hey, we both got the same tank top on, you're awesome. You give each other a hug and like, let's trade candy. And so you do a thing where you put your hands together and like the peace sign start off, and you do make a heart for love. And, you clasp your hands for unity and then interlock your fingers for respect. And then
you
trade
the
candy back and forth.
You would take the one that you wanted off of your wrist, you wanted to give away, and put it on their wrist, like while your hands are interlocked, and then they would give you one back.
So it's just a little,
did you guys just learn this as you started going, or did you
read
up on it?
Yeah, you just see it, and then you'll ask. Because everyone,
and then you do it wrong the first 10 times, like the temple.
Like the temple!
You got your own temple handshake. I love
that's
it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, but they're not... it's the pony beads. They call them candy, but they're not edible.
Yeah, you don't eat them.
So what you would do is you would write, like, I would make a whole bunch for a festival, and I would write stuff that I think is funny, or like, or I'd write EDC 2017 or whatever, and I would like, I would put like special beads on it, right? Glitter beads, flower beads, like whatever.
But just you're making that. You're making your own stuff.
Yeah. And our kids love to help us make this stuff. It's
awesome. Like the elastic, like thread kind of thing.
All right, I'm gonna get it.
Seriously, this is great. And what I was thinking, like candy, real candy, and I'm like, how do you know people? There's like germs on them.
Yeah, just because it's how they call it.
Right. Oh wow!
So we just have this in our kitchen because we just sit down with our kids and our friends and make this stuff. But so I have my iron, so I can make perler beads.
What we'll do, we'll end up putting the on our left wrist, the ones like our kids have made that says "I love Daddy," like I have something like that, and then the ones that I'm willing to trade that I've gotten from other people on my right wrist. So then I always do the right hand trade.
Always with your right. Oh.
Don't accidentally trade the ones on my left wrist.
Yeah. See, okay, so this is this type of stuff that I love to hear.
Next time I come to your house, I'm doing a little handshake and giving you a bead.
That's right.
I had no idea about, but it's you know, I think about like tattoos and the meaning that they have, and that. You know, they're castigated, but look, this is a symbol of certain things. And then you go to these places with these pony beads, and you got these things representing your kids on your left hand and all that. This is the type of stuff I wanted people to know about this culture.
Now the weird necklace, too, makes sense. It's like, what are they wearing on their neck? It's a lot of meaning.
Our kids will make stuff that, since they can't go, they make stuff, and they're like, will you trade this for me, Dad? And so we've done that, and they're like, we'll trade and bring it back.
And then we take pictures, right? We're like, this is my kid made this, and so then, like, we'll take a picture of the person who traded with so that we can show our kids.
And the spirit, actually, so here's a good confirmation that the Church of Raving is the real church, is that I actually had, my son had made this candy that he wanted me to trade, and we were at EDC, and it wasn't that special, and I wasn't like finding a moment to trade, and so I'm like, we got to go, because it's the last day. So I just tapped this guy in the back. I'm like, hey, I have this 10-year-old, he made this bracelet, but it's not that special, because this guy had a lot of the big stuff. That sounds bad. Yeah.
My 10-year-old, it's not really good, but I mean. Yeah,
it's not really big, and like didn't take a lot of time, but he's just my 10-year-old. He made it, and he really wanted to trade, but you have a lot of like really nicer stuff. Like, do you have anything smaller that you'd want to trade with him? He's like, hold on. I actually have been waiting all day for someone to stop me because I wanted to trade this one, and he pulls it out of his backpack, and it was a Pokemon. Which one? Remember the name of it? It was,
I don't know, Charmander.
Charmander. It was like the Charmander one that is actually my son's favorite Pokemon out of all of them. And he's like, I want to trade this. He pulled out. I'm like, no way. That's actually his favorite Pokemon in the world. This is like the best thing he literally could have gotten here. And the guy like started crying. He's like, you making me so happy. So he took a big hug and like took a picture of it. He's like, this makes my day. I'm so happy. Like, send this. Tell your son that I made this. And like told me the whole story behind making it and stuff. And so he feels connected to my son. My son feels connected that he got his favorite Pokemon just by chance of the universe coming together and that with what he made. And so it's like, it's way more of a family.
It's like teaching kids that there's love out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and then it's like everybody just does their favorite things, right? And like, so there's so much individuality and creativity around it. You know, like people, it just doesn't matter how silly it is or whatever. If it's like, if it's your favorite show or your favorite thing or like a phrase that you love that's from pop culture that's ridiculous or whatever, like it doesn't matter, like, you know,
the totems, do you know what those are, that phrase totems?
Yeah, I mean, I know the concept, but
yeah, so people will go and you'll have your squad, you know, and yeah, it's hard to find each other, so they put on these poles something up top so everyone can see it, and it's called your tribe totem or whatever. And so it
like your banner from Game of Thrones.
You're exactly,
like,
yeah. So when you go off and go to the bathroom and you're coming back to this crowd of, you know, several thousand people, you can find your group. But people, they make it their own. They'll like put crazy story. Like when we were at EDC, actually, we ran into some ex-Mormons from Utah that had a picture of what's that guy, Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, yeah.
Ryan Gosling, and it has some phrase.
It was one of the memes where it was like, hey, girl. And it said like, like it said something like, I read your patriarchal blessing and it told me you should come to this rave.
Yeah, something like that. So we ran up to them, we're like, you know, obviously knew like with their background and everything, and gave them a hug, traded some candy and took a picture. It was awesome.
You run into all these people that love the same thing as you, and then you're instant friends, right?
Okay. But again, I came back to we were joking about the temple and ritual and connection with other people. It has all those elements to it.
Yeah.
But what a good phrase, right? Like, I'm like, this is something I can really get behind. Peace, love, unity, and respect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is. It's a very tribal community thing that I think that's why it's had the success it's had in the larger scene, is because it's very captivating. It pulls you in. You feel mm-hmm. connected, and it has all those trademarks.
There's no lines, you know? There's no, like, racial or, you know, sexual preference or anything. It's just like there's just, it's so inclusive, like by far the most inclusive environment I've ever been.
Total acceptance. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Man, how you lose community in a religion and find community in
Raven.
Raven.
That's fun. That's badass. Yeah.
Dance, music, and crazy costumes.
That's why I don't think we'll stop doing it, especially seeing the older, you know, I think our tastes will evolve.
Sure.
Stuff like that. But I think that in one way or another, this is kind of who we are. It's our new community. Yeah. We'll just keep doing it.
No, I just love, like, what you said, though. Going to a dance club, you know, there's always people, like, men trying to grind you and grab you, where yeah. this yep. seems like, oh, I can do this. That's fun. Because we love to dance.
Yeah.
It's just, sometimes having creepy people around you is yuck. Yeah. It ruins your moment.
It does.
Yeah, you see, I mean, you never go to a rave and see some guy standing by himself with a drink in his hand just, like, scoping out all the ladies. You know, it's just yeah. not that at all.
Find community where you can, man, where your interests lie. Don't force. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Hey, well, thanks for taking the time and talking about, being open, being honest. That's what so Jake, I want to call Jake out a little, because when I kind of floated this thing, he's like, what? We can't just get on and be like, hey, why do you post that shit? And what do people think about your kids? And I said, no, Jake, I think we can ask exactly that with them.
Yeah. Everybody's already thinking it.
Yeah. Right. He said, why shy away from it, man? Do you, boo.
Yeah, but you're not doing anything wrong, so you're right. Yeah. Own it.
Which is why I kind of want to get our side of the story out, because people are making assumptions, and it's like...
Absolutely.
I like owning the story.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing it.
You're awesome.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
All right, talk soon.
Bye. Bye.